time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
One of these floors is the 13. You'd have to take a little time to think about it because they'll do like L, M, and then a 5. But like, just because you don't call it 13 doesn't mean 13 doesn't exist.
And SI's Pat 40.
At some point, I think we're going to reach a level where we just have to do like an Iowa spinoff podcast.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. No Ross today. He is, he will be back later in the week, though, handling some important stuff. We start where we seem to keep starting. Jim Harbaugh. First, everything was going along fine. Then he was going to get suspended for 4 games by the NCAA. Then the other part of the NCAA said, no, we don't want that. That's not enough. So then he was going to get suspended 0 games. Now the University of Michigan has come out and said, let's suspend him for 3 games. Self-imposed 3-game suspension on Harbaugh. And so now we're back. Harbaugh was they just could not get that ECU, UNLV, and Bowling Green games done for Jim Harbaugh. They were doomed to fail. He will sit the first 3, but this one is via the school. He will be back September 23rd for a home game versus Rutgers. I'm not going through all the litany of what this is all about. Probably know, or you probably don't care. At this point, I did not think that the University of Michigan would do the internal self-imposed suspension, but it's a clear way of saying, hey, we know that there was some wrongdoing here. This will maybe curry favor, cooperative favor with the NCAA. If they come down later and either further try to suspend Harbaugh or apply other sanctions to the football program, I'm not sure what sanctions even matter anymore, but who knows? But that is where we're at. So they're going to curry favor and say, look, we took this seriously and we sat our head coach 3 games. Pat, your thoughts on the latest and hopefully the last development in the Harbaugh suspension scandal?
I think it will be the last for a while, but not the last on this. The thing I loved about this, and this really, you want to know how Michigan really feels about all this? Ward Manuel in the official statement. While the ongoing NCAA matter continues through the NCAA process, today's announcement is our way of addressing mistakes that our department has agreed to in an attempt to further that process. Not mistakes that we made, just mistakes we agreed to, because we got to agree to something. It's the last little shred of stubborn arrogance here from Michigan. We didn't do anything wrong. You're just saying we did something wrong, and I guess we're caught, but we're still not admitting it. Dang it. We're just agreeing that there were mistakes. So, where this puts them, this is an interesting situation. Michigan is not dealing in a position of full strength here. So they take the 3 games here, and if you get a 4th game next year, like they were going to give them, that's Fresno State in the opener. If you get more than that, the 2nd game's against Texas next year, with perhaps Arch Manning as the starting quarterback for the Longhorns. Who knows? But so there are still some significant stakes if this goes to a hearing, if the NCAA says, no, we want to punish you more, and if Michigan can't hold a line of saying, well, punish us 4 games. That's what you were going to do to begin with. And the Committee on Infractions comes back and says, no, we want to punish you more than that. And if you do, you could see Jim Harbaugh sit out against the Texas Longhorns next season.
Yeah.
A lot of could have, should have, maybe there, but that's a potential setup for where this is going.
Yeah, that's when Fox calls in and says, they got the juice over the Big Ten, but do they have it over the NCAA? Yeah, so that's it. Do they want 6 games out of Harbaugh? Do they want 4? But they just turned down 4. Why'd they turn down 4? Why wasn't that enough? There is a bit where, if you if you agree that there were violations in Michigan's way of explaining it, or you know you did it, you're supposed to punish your, you're supposed to kind of do a self-inflicted punishment. Cooperation with the NCAA is a mixed bag. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You're supposed to, but there's times when you just say, go pound sand, go to hell, and they don't really get you. It's not just the suspensions to Harbaugh. The school has to look and say, will they put sanctions on the football program in general? Could they reduce scholarships? Could they put recruiting sanctions on us? Could they ban us from a bowl, a postseason or something? I think that would be wildly out of scale here.
Yeah.
So even if Harbaugh leaves at the end of the season to go back to the NFL, you could still have Michigan sitting there holding the bag saying, well, they can't get Harbaugh, but we're going to now take it out on you. Remember, this is a panel of the Committee on Infractions, three people from the Committee on Infractions who will ultimately determine this case have already declined to accept the four-game suspension. So part of your jury is clearly not very interested in, or seems interested in more penalty, higher penalties. So as a school, do you have to do this? Now, here's my thing about recruiting violations, recruiting sanctions. I don't know that any of those matter. Recruiting now is NIL, NFL, like, It's can you get me to the NFL? What's the NIL deal? Like, it's not necessarily, well, I can bring 75 official visits. Well, now I'm down to 65. I don't know that these sanctions that they have even work in the 2023 and forward world of how recruiting gets done. You know what I mean? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe the penalties are outdated. Some of it's like, this is all the stuff they would have to assess. So if someone says, hey, you can't bring six more guys in on a fish, you know, I don't care. Like, right. It's more important. Can we sit there and say, hey, Bryce Underwood, the star young quarterback they're fighting LSU for, who's a high school junior, they're not really worried about getting him over to campus. It's, do we have enough money to match LSU, what LSU might put in there? Or anybody else. So, and quite honestly, if Harbaugh's gone, the whole recruiting dynamics change again. So I don't know. This school decided to do. I didn't think they'd do it, but there certainly was that option, and here it is.
Yeah, I was surprised they did it as well. You know, I don't know whether they just felt like they need to get in front of this to a degree and show some proactivity and figuring, again, if we take three games here, maybe we can limit the damage, potential damage next year. But I agree with you that recruiting restrictions are more theory than substance at this point. We hear constantly about people complaining about everything in college sports. I never hear anybody that has recruiting restrictions saying, oh, that really killed us. That kept us from getting guys we wanted. I think that's a little bit of an outdated concept. So I agree with you on that front that this may not.
You remember Kansas took Bill Self and its entire staff off the road for a summer?
Yeah.
It didn't matter. And nowadays you're recruiting half the a quarter of your teams through a transfer portal. Transfers just commit. They don't need visits. They don't need this, they like, right? They're just sitting at their school. You want to go play for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. We need a left tackle. I'm in. Like, I don't think that recruiting derby, that's where it matters. That's how he's building the program. It's transfers.
Sure.
He gets some really good, solid players and he brings in the transfers or keeps who he has.
Yeah.
So
that's it. You know, a lot of these guys now, the best players are 21 years old, have been through, they don't need to see the waterfall. They need to know, what's your offense look like? How do I fit into it? And you show them the game film of that and get them on the phone. Say, this is how you do it. You don't have to have the roll out the carpet official visit necessarily for those guys.
Right. Yeah. They no longer care about the uniform pictures and the, and what are the school color? Okay. Guess what? We have really nice stuff here. Okay, we know our stadium's big. We have a weight room. We have, you know.
Yeah.
It's probably nicer than yours, but maybe not, but who cares? You know, right. we've won 34 games the last 2 years, 3 years. I don't know. I think the sanction, I would not be fearful of NCAA sanctions other than postseason ban. But again, like, that would just be wild.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. I mean, yeah. The NCAA all but announced with the Tennessee ruling that they're getting out of the business of postseason bans. So I would be stunned if that came into play. Now, again, how hard could they hit Harbaugh, you know, over and above a four-game suspension? If it's 5-6, you know, if you had three more next year, that could have some bite. If he's around and if he wants to, you know, if you're trying to get to the playoff again, which should be the goal every year, I'd imagine now, then you could get into some legitimate sanctions with teeth. But until then, missing these three games this year, eh, and Michigan gets to pat itself on the back for mistakes it agreed to.
All right. Quite briefly, any chance it matters against East Carolina, UNLV, and Bowling Green?
None. I mean, East Carolina last year they had a quarterback, Halton Ahlers, you know, who's like a fifth-year, 20-some-year-old guy who could really chuck it around. No. I mean, no. There's no chance. They could put Dan Wetzel on the sideline, and they're going to win them all by – they're going to cover probably even.
Available for a small fee. They can't afford me.
Tell them you'll take half of Harbaugh's per game.
I will take 1/10 of whatever you're giving Harbaugh. Okay? I'll wear the black pants and the thing and have the – what does he have, like a – does he still carry the highlighter around his neck?
I think so, yeah. And he catches passes from the quarterbacks pregame too, so you got to do that.
No, you can't do that. I can't do that. I can wear the hat with the skinny M. I can stare off into space with the best of them.
You can bend over and – grab your knees
crouch
on the sideline.
Right, no problem. I think it's done. Yeah. JJ, run around out there a little bit. Hand it to Blake. We're gonna win. I still think they should bring Brady in as the
be tremendous. Fantastic.
Woodson or Brady alternate the first 3 weeks, and that's how I would do it. Anyway, I don't want to say it again. It's a nothing story, but for a bunch of number two, second level violations, what a story. That's a 9 months of drama. Way to go, Harbaugh. Yeah.
Incredible.
it's always something.
Yeah, endless and back and forth and up and down. And, I mean, one of the most prominent coaches and personalities out there, stubborn to the very end, admitting nothing.
Suspended. I mean, suspended. Suspended again. Oh, boy. All right.
I was on the second best podcast last week in the country, Tony Kornheiser's, and he said, the only reason we have you on is talk about Harbaugh and conferences. Is there anything else going on? I was like, that's pretty much it right now.
Nah, not really. Yeah, not really. Now, we do have games this week. Week zero, baby.
Yes.
Love that we have week zero in college football. They can't even call the first week, the first week. So disorganized.
The Big Ten has 18, the Big 12 has 16, and week zero is week one, week zero.
Right, but isn't it the first week? It is, but we don't call it the first week. We call it week zero because we don't want to admit that it's the first week, because the first week, which is actually, it's like in the elevators when they take out number 13. The 13th floor doesn't exist. I've never understood this. Like superstition.
Right.
What a weird
superstition
thing.
From like the 1800s or whatever.
Yeah. You know? Still impacts building codes. It's like, you do know there's a 13th floor though, right? You do understand that one of these floors is the 13th. You'd have to take a little time to think about it because they'll do like L, M, and then like five. But like, just because you don't call it 13 doesn't mean 13 doesn't exist. I just, so, like, what? It's unlucky.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift's favorite number is 13. It's going all right for her.
Yeah, right? It's working out.
Right? That's her thing, 13.
Dan Marino did okay wearing 13.
Yeah, Alex Morgan, 13. Yeah,
Caleb Williams, Heisman Trophy winner.
Caleb, how is this still how is 13 superstition still a thing?
I have no idea.
Don't want to be on that 13th floor. Well, you're on L and then 2, 3, 4. Oh, yeah. Still 14 is then 13. Hate to break it to you.
We need a building construction person out there. If you listen to the pod, hit us on Twitter and explain it to us.
Somebody explain to me, why doesn't someone just go for it? Do you get less money? Like if you buy a condo on 13? Or to like, if you're going like at the Hyatt and you're in room 1308, you go, oh no, do you get like a little bit off? Would you get less? Would it cost less? I don't know. Anyway, this is where Ross tells us to get back on point. This is why we need Ross.
Yeah. We're down the 13th floor rabbit hole.
Yeah. I don't understand. Anyway, Notre Dame plays Navy in Dublin. I want to spend a little time on Notre Dame fighting Irish. This, to me, is the most interesting game of the weekend of week zero. We don't know what Navy's going to – they've got a whole new thing. They're preparing for the wishbone, so we'll see. Maybe they come out and air raid it and stun us all. Navy is known for its secretive tactic changes, right? Loose lips sink ships, so we shouldn't know.
That's true, but it would be kind of un-American if Navy comes out slinging it all over.
I don't know.
You know, it's kind of their role. You do not sling it. You line up in that option and you grind along.
I think Marcus Freeman is one of the most interesting people to watch this year in college football. How good is he as a coach and how good is Notre Dame? 9-4 last year. Tough start. They lose at Ohio State, 21-10. They were kind of competitive, but not quite. Good game. They held it together for a while. Come home, devastating loss to Marshall. Embarrassing loss for Notre Dame to lose to Marshall. They sneak by Cal. They look good against North Carolina. They beat BYU. They're starting to get going. They lose to an awful Stanford team. And they finally get it rolling later. They have a big win against, remember when Syracuse was hot?
Yep.
Then they beat Clemson. They get going, get to the end. They lose at USC in a decent effort, come back and win a bowl game against South Carolina. Certainly concerns about Marcus Freeman early, but look, rookie head coach, you don't hire a 35-year-old and expect him to be, you know, polished. He's not Nick Saban. Everything's not perfect. So a little bit of growing pain, showed some stuff. Recruiting has been good, but not appreciably better than Brian Kelly. There was certainly a lot of hope for that. He comes into this season though. He's got Sam Hartman, transfers in from Wake Forest. This is an excellent quarterback, best Notre Dame quarterback in a long time. And the question is, how good is Notre Dame? And can Marcus Freeman, I don't think anyone's soured on him. I just don't think anyone's been able to say one way or another, this is the guy, this isn't the guy. But he certainly has that ability to answer the question one way or the other this year. So what do you think? Is Marcus Freeman one of your most intriguing people in college football this year, Pat?
Absolutely. He's on my list, and I'm
fascinated.
You
actually do a list, right?
I do. I do a most intriguing coaches list, most intriguing quarterbacks, most intriguing non-quarterbacks, etc. A lot of lists. But, this is a big reveal season for him. It's not make or break year two, but it's a big reveal because, like, to your point, and we like being able to get an easy, hands-on, definitive statement in a guy's first year. He's great. He's not up to it. We didn't get that with Marcus Freeman. I was just up there 10 days ago or so. They scrimmaged. You couldn't see the scrimmage. Reports out of it were that their offense looked great. Sam Hartman, probably the best quarterback Notre Dame's had since Brady Quinn. He is really good and veteran and gives them something they definitely didn't have last year. They've got some young receivers and receivers who haven't quite lived up to their billing that need to come through. They've got some defensive linemen that need to come through, but otherwise they like their team. The thing with Marcus Freeman, the interesting thing and the thing I want to know in talking to him, you know, and asking him where maybe the growth areas are for him from first-year head coach to second-year head coach, is he a tougher guy? I'm not saying he's not tough, but was he maybe a little too nice as a career assistant who became really popular with his players, and that's one of the reasons they were so happy to have him made the full-time head coach? And you got to turn that corner in that page, and then all of a sudden you got to be a little bit, you don't have to be Nick Saban, but you can't necessarily be the same guy that you were when you were an assistant coach and you were a quote-unquote players guy. And even with his own coaching staff, I asked him at one point, I said, are you meaner this year than you were last year? And his answer was good. He said, I don't like the word meaner. Am I more demanding, was what he alluded to. He said, yeah, he's probably more demanding. And so we'll see how that works out for him. I don't think it naturally fits his personality necessarily to just be a, you know, a fire breather, but you don't have to be that to win. You maybe just have to be a little bit less of a nice coach. So we'll find out. We're going to see, you know, what's the sideline look there. They've had some staff turnover that largely wasn't expected. Tommy Reese was the offensive coordinator, went to Alabama. They promoted Jared Parker there, who had already been in the program. Strength coach Matt Bayless, kind of unexpectedly, at least from the outside, left right before the start of preseason camp. So what was that about? What does that mean? Don't know. Will it have an effect? Don't know. But this is, while Navy, they should beat Navy, it's kind of tricky opener, as you said. You know, they play a different style, and we've got a new coach. There's some unknown. So I am very curious to watch and probably overreact to Notre Dame on Saturday.
Yeah, always. There's a lot of offseason about the offensive coordinator. Obviously, Reese leaves, which is funny. They weren't great offensively last year. Their quarterback play was not great. Reese goes to Alabama, though, which is kind of stunning, and takes the quarterback. But then it's kind of a clumsy hire if you're really paying attention. And Parker gets kind of upgraded from tight end coach, and no one really knows what kind of coordinator. I'm always skeptical of making any call on an offense. Like, sometimes these young offensive coordinators are exactly the person.
Yeah.
Right? Like, well, I mean, who knows? I never know right. What an offense coordinator is going to do. I mean, so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think you're right. One thing is interesting if Marcus, I think Marcus is a people person, right? Everyone likes this guy.
Yes. Yes.
Dating back to when he's a Ohio State player and a Cincinnati mm-hmm. assistant coach and a Notre, like, everyone likes the guy. The way he carries himself, talks, he's easy to root for.
Absolutely.
And it's funny because he's replacing a guy in Brian Kelly that not that many people liked.
Right. Prickly.
Doesn't come across that way. I actually thought he was fine, but I get, like, a lot of his jokes are fails and he just looks angry, but was a heck of a football coach. And he was underappreciated at Notre Dame in a way. Couldn't win the big one, but he got him to the big one.
Yeah.
And they never lost the bad game. Maybe not never, but rarely. And when every time they had that one bad season, there was like a game they just basically quit against Michigan, he could turn things around. Extremely demanding. So, you know, maybe he needs a little Brian Kelly in him. Maybe he doesn't. Or maybe he just needs to be himself. I don't know. It's just a very interesting season. They have Navy. Look, they should beat Navy. If they don't beat Navy, there's going to be a big reaction.
Yeah.
Tennessee State comes in. I think it's the first FCS team they've ever played in HBCU. Mm-hmm. So they should win that. They're at NC State. It's a very tricky game. NC State is dangerous this year. They can absolutely win that game. That is going to be a really big game because everyone's counting on beat NC State, beat Central Michigan, and then Ohio State shows up, and you're 4-0, and this is a top, you know, 10 matchup, if not better.
Right.
But that NC State game. Then they're at Duke, at Louisville, USC comes, Pitt, at Clemson, Wake, and then at Stanford. Three monster games. Ohio State, USC, and Clemson, but some tricky games. NC State, I would say Pitt as well. And then this kind of weird Wake Forest game where Sam Hartman goes against his old guys. But this season could go in all sorts of different directions.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It really is. Like you said, there's one big game a month, but there's a lot of other games that, like, oh, you don't show up like you did against Marshall. You'll not only get beat, you might get beat badly by an NC State, by a Louisville, by a Duke.
At Duke. Right. I'd add that right after Ohio State. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's where we'll see. That's one thing he did allude to when I talked to him, too, of, like, the growth curve of getting over one game and getting to the next game. And, you know, you lose to Ohio State and you pour everything into that season opener. And then you come back and you are completely flat against a Marshall. And so, you know, we'll look and see if Notre Dame has improved in that area. But they've got talent. They've got a lot of good players. They've probably got a top 10 pick on the offensive line. Joe Alt, again, everybody loves the quarterback. The running backs are probably good enough, need some receivers. They should be much better offensively. And then defensively, if you can rush the passer, otherwise things are probably in pretty good shape there. So Notre Dame's one of those teams. If they are well coached and stay healthy, could end up in the top five, could end up in the playoff contention. If not, outside of the top 10, 15, 20, and people are still asking whether Marcus Freeman's the right guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all there. And they can play a big role in how this whole season it actually plays out. And there's another part to this. And one of the big parts of Brian Kelly restoring the program to strength and to relevancy is, before Brian Kelly, there was a lot of people who would say Notre Dame can never be good. Notre Dame can't be good unless it joins a conference. Notre Dame is living off glory from, you know, Lou Holtz and then before that. And they haven't won a national title since 1988. They haven't been relevant. Brian Kelly made them matter. BCS game, two playoff appearances. Yes, they lost all of those, often in spectacular fashion. But, again, they were there. They won games. They had Heisman finalists. They had first-round picks, all on offense and defense, right? Every time Notre Dame came to your city, it was the biggest game, the highest ticket. The TV ratings were there. But they had to be good to get that. Notre Dame can't rest on a conference, right? Everyone else who's in a conference can sit back and say, we stink for the next 5 years. Our money is the same. Notre Dame's going into an NBC contract negotiation in 2 years. What are they worth? Now, I would suggest that they feel confident. NBC feels confident. They're probably going to get enough money where they can feel confident in saying, we don't have to join a conference. We're good. Especially if the ACC sticks together and they still have the scheduling alliance. But there's, like, a little bit more to the business of them being pretty good. You don't want to go into an NBC contract if all of a sudden you're going 4-8 or something like that.
Like, that's a great
there's
point.
There's a lot riding on the line here.
That's a great point. That, like, Jack Swarbrick stuck his neck out there with a untested head coach in his early 30s and said, this is who we're going with for the future of the program coming after, I believe, Brian Kelly ended up being the winningest coach in school history.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, and what's coming up in the next is a huge contract negotiation, and the entire structure of college sports is very fragile all around you, you know? Can Marcus Freeman keep us independent or not? No pressure, Marcus.
Can he keep the ACC alive? Yeah, Marcus Freeman. Any more pressure we can throw on you? He's like my cousin Vinny at the trial. And you're a biological clock. But that's what you risk when you're independent.
Yeah.
There's no, well, we're not good right now, but don't worry, Ohio State and Michigan are going to play, and like 18 million people are going to watch. So just keep cutting the checks. Like, if we start to stink again, I would not think one season would scare NBC away.
I don't think it would.
But if I'm a Notre Dame television negotiator, I would like to walk in going, we just went 10-2.
Mm-hmm.
See how good we played? We were still relevant when we played Clemson. Like, we're still relevant in November. Right, we're still relevant. Not just the Ohio State rating, but the USC rating, because they will be in 3 of the 10 biggest games of the year. So they need to draw numbers. It's just the nature of the risk.
Yeah, yeah.
So here it is. I mean, they just got a big Under Armour deal, right?
They did. Really big.
Did they stay with Under Armour? Was it?
They did. Like a 10-year, $100 million
deal, I think. Like the highest one ever. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, they're bringing in money that way. And, you know, Notre Dame has money and has ways to get money. But the TV contract is the biggest thing. And as you said, that it sure helps to strike when the iron's hot. Now, the guy that's going to be negotiating that contract, what just left being president of NBC Sports, Pete Bevacqua, who's going to be the next AD. So they certainly have someone who knows his way around that block and knows his way around NBC. I think it's going to work out just fine for Notre Dame, but it would be much easier for them, I would think, if you are going in off of another good season as opposed to where the trajectory is pointing the other way.
Yeah. Georgia has named Carson Beck its starter. Beats out Brock Vandergriff for that spot. We will see if Carson can be the next Stetson Bennett, but quick thoughts on that. Any surprise?
Nope, no surprise. He looked like the best one coming out of spring. Now the question is, you know, with Stetson gone and with Todd Monken gone to the NFL, the coordinator, and Mike Bobo back in there, does this offense revert to Kirby comfort zone of before the last two seasons where, you know, we're going to throw it some, but we're going to run it more and we're going to play defense and we're just not going to be as flashy offensively? Or do they kind of try to keep the pedal to the metal the way they had it last year? I mean, that was such a revelation. Georgia's offense was so fun last year. Are they going to keep it fun with Carson Beck or do they dial it back?
Yeah, this is it. And, you know, Carson, I'm sure, congratulations on winning the job. He's quite excited and he's getting handed the keys to the Lamborghini. But there's also the bit of like, okay, go win a national title.
Yeah, that's all.
Like, other than that, you didn't do that. Yeah, not failure. Yeah. Oh, we've been waiting for a couple years to have a real QB. Well, the real QB did pretty well. The old QB, Ohio State, Ryan Day says that, the battle between Kyle McCord and Devin Brown could carry into the season. Does he have a guy or is he trying to prevent a transfer? What do we think? Did last year.
Yeah, I would suggest maybe the latter. And I think that's one area Harbaugh might have broken some new ground that I wouldn't be surprised to see several people doing that. Ohio State, hey. Missouri's talking about doing it, where their first couple of games, they may play two different guys, may even start two different games. When you are trying to keep quarterback depth, the longer you can wait to declare and tell somebody you're not the starter, probably the better your chances of keeping him on the roster throughout the season. It's crazy, strange times like that. But everybody that says that, it's so hard to decide. We can't decide. It's not, you know, it's up. I don't believe them. I don't believe him. I think that's just public posturing, A, for your opponent, but B, for trying to maintain your QB depth.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be back after this message. All right. More quarterback drama starting QB. The other school replacing a four consecutive great starting quarterbacks who've gone on to the NFL is Alabama. Alabama, not necessarily swimming in certainty. You think, is it Kyle McCord or Devin Brown? It could be all sorts of people at Alabama. Sean, can you play this is the quote when asked after a scrimmage, I think over the weekend, of Nick Saban. Nick, how you know, what happened with the quarterbacks out there? Can you play that clip?
They all got to play. They all took snaps. They all completed some passes. They all made some throws that weren't as good as they should have been. And they all got sacked. That's what I saw.
Okay. Okay. They don't need to sell tickets in Alabama, but that isn't exactly how you sell tickets.
Speaking of coaches who don't want to tip their hand at all. Oh, my goodness.
Is that Nick being Nick, or is that Nick being... It didn't sound that positive either. It wasn't like they were all great.
No. No. I who knows? It can be hard to read into it, but yes, he did not say, yeah, we saw a lot of good things from all of them out there. Now, again, this could be just absolute roster management, and I'm not giving you bastards anything. Keep guessing to the media and to opponents and whoever else. But if that's an accurate indicator of how the quarterbacks are doing, well, hope the running backs are good.
Yeah, they got a lot of other good guys. Yeah. I mean, I'm listening to, look at these Ryan Day quotes. Our staff feels confident in both, which is exciting. This is two good players getting after it. I think they're making each other better. They're both playing very well. We have confidence in them. You don't know until you get to the game exactly what you have. Practice is good. Practice gives a snapshot. There's been times over camp I felt one was going to take over, then the other came back. I mean, that's the battle between McCord and Brown, and I know that's Ryan Day. Saban's just like, yeah, they all were out there. Yeah. We do have quarterbacks, five of them.
They all took the field. They buttoned their chin straps. They competed. There we go.
All I'm saying is if this goes bad, this was the tell.
Yeah, right.
Okay, like he's going to be like, I tried to tell you guys, we are bad at quarterback. I tried to tell you. He looked like he was blinking like a hostage.
Yeah, now, I mean, yes, they have had an unbelievable run of quarterbacks, four in a row. But they also won a national championship with Jacob Coker. And we're pretty damn good even with, like, John Parker Wilson at quarterback. So Greg McElroy, who's, a great announcer, but he was not necessarily an overwhelming quarterback. So Saban can figure some things out if he doesn't have a great QB.
Yeah. I mean, look, they've got a lot of other guys here. So it's all there. I want to introduce our new favorite band. Our new favorite band. You can cue this up, Sean. It's called the Van Halen, not Van Halen, Van Halen Band, after Hayden Fry. This goes into the, sort of like the Dead Schembechlers at Ohio State or some of the others.
Yes.
This seems to be a new band, the Van Halen Band, coming soon to a tailgate near Kinnick. They are both an Iowa, they're pro Iowa and a Van Halen tribute band rolled into one. They, the song Jump, Van Halen Jump? They have one called Punt. Might as well punt and play this one. I think this is just called Iowa to the stylings of Panama, the Van Halen classic. Play this, Sean. Pat, your thoughts on Van Halen?
You see the video for these guys too. They got their their fake Hayden Fry mustaches and
hat. Yeah, the 80s cap. Spandex. You got to see the video. Yeah, it's not a studio band. You got to see them live, man. You got to feel it.
I prefer their musical stylings on Punt to Iowa. Because the punt, it just speaks to the program's ethos, and the lyrics are pretty clever there. Fourth and inches, they're gonna always punt. So at some point, I think we're gonna reach a level where we just have to do like an Iowa spinoff podcast for Iowa and Iowa State, because so much crazy keeps coming out of that state that we can't ignore it. It's too much. So. like All in the Family spun off the Jeffersons and stuff like that. Yeah. All these shows. We're going to have a spinoff podcast on the state of Iowa. I'm convinced at some point we're going to Lake Okeechobee and we're just going to set up shop. But
it is an outsized influence on the pod. I just like that. There were someone was like, hey man, what do you say? We dress up like Hayden Fry. Learn the Van Halen songs, rewrite them for Iowa. They have looks like a food truck they're driving around in or some kind of van. And, I mean, they're going to be a big hit. I think. They'll find a way to get NIL in on this, the Swarm beer and all that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're going to be a huge hit. Yeah, they need to upgrade their sound system. It ain't great. But, yeah. You know, I will say the guitarist is actually pretty good. I mean, there's some legitimate, like, he can rip those Eddie Van Halen riffs off pretty well. So
better than Hooray Ames or not? I mean, Hooray Ames is an original song.
Yes. But this is an adaptation. I like the adaptation. Yes, it's better than Hooray for Ames, for the love of
it's
God.
It's better, but like Eddie Van Halen wrote it, not some, yeah. At these
but
four.
He didn't write punt. He wrote jump. This is punt. Punt's hilarious. Punt is good.
Yeah, but he and David, whoever, somebody made the song, like the tune. Like it wasn't
I know.
These four people in Iowa. Ames, Iowa. I mean, you're drafting off of a musical legend there.
they need to get to the Iowa State Fair
and have a sound off between the Ames people, Hooray Ames, and then the Van Haydens.
Now that would be awesome.
Did you see they did a butter statue of Caitlin Clark?
Oh, yeah.
Winner gets impressive. A butter statue next year. I think this is. Let's caucus.
Which collective can sell more beer at the band off, the sound off between those two bands? I think that would be outstanding. I'm in favor of it.
They plant the corn, then they wait for it to grow. They just have nothing to do.
That's it. The time where they're watching the corn stalks grow, they decide to all of a sudden create Van Halen.
By the way...
Not the only college football song of the week, though, either. I don't know that we can get it in this week or need to go to the next episode, but the Pac-4 song.
Oh, the Pac-4, yeah. Let's do that next time when we have it.
We'll do that next time, yeah.
Pac-4. It's also, yeah, we could do a whole musical.
Guy named Dan Byrne, yeah, did some fine work.
We could do a whole musical show.
Yeah.
We should have done it when Ross wasn't here because he'll get... Yeah, he'd be disappointed in us. All right, let me get to this story. We were going to talk about it and didn't get around to it. But the state of Missouri, or Mizzou just recently picked up a huge recruitment from Williams Nwaneri.
Nwaneri,
right. Yeah, mm-hmm. One of the top five players in the country, a defensive end, consensus top three player in the country, I think. I think some have him number one. Needless to say, everybody wanted him. This is the kind of pass rushing 6'6", game wrecker that every team wants. And he just committed to Mizzou. He's from, hails from outside Kansas City. And huge get for Eli Drinkwitz and their staff. And one of the highest rated recruits to ever sign with Mizzou. This came the same week that the Missouri state government enacted a law involving NIL compensation. And this is the law. High school player in the state of Missouri who signs or comes to some kind of agreement, I'm still a little confused on this, with an in-state school. Could be Mizzou, which is the only D1 football, but it could be St. Louis University in basketball or Missouri State or anything, whatever. An in-state school, UMKC, once they come to the agreement, and it might include a scholarship agreement that could be signed like September 1, at that point, the state law allows that high school kid to start receiving NIL money and is protected from NCAA investigation. Now, I think this part's, I don't like your rules no longer apply because we have a state law, but this is what they're all doing. If that recruit does not commit to an in-state school, so if Williams Nwaneri, how do you say it again?
Nwaneri,
that's it, Nwaneri, sorry.
Yeah.
N is silent. That's what I'm trying. I'm getting a new one of them in there as well. So anyway. If Williams Nwaneri signed with Arkansas or LSU or Florida or Oklahoma was his other big one, he would not be allowed to get the money until he enrolls at that school. So it gives an in-state, if you sign with an in-state school, you get anywhere from 1 month to 6 to 9 to who knows, head start on getting paid. It is a state government incentive to get local players to sign with the local school. And that's the deal. Other states are likely to follow. There's some others that are kind of like that. Other states just allow high school kids to get NIL money right away. So it's not even a big deal. But what's interesting about this is just the state government, basically the same way a state government would say, hey, if you build a factory in our state, if you expand and build an extra factory in our state, we'll give you a tax break or some business incentive. But if you build that factory outside the state, we're not giving it to you, right? This is straight government involved in business, the business being Mizzou football. What do you think of this law? Now, Williams said played a small role, but it was mainly how much he liked Coach Drinkwitz and all that. And I don't think this is a make or break deal for most recruits, but it's done for a reason. It's an incentive. It's a small incentive, but it's an incentive. What do you think of these kind of laws coming into play and actually being done state by state, Pat?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And your column was good on it because it did kind of point out, yeah, this is how state government works in terms of incentives for businesses. So if you could draw a direct through line and just say this is business, fine. But yeah, Missouri is part of the Southeastern Conference and is part of the NCAA. There has to be some uniformity of rules. This, obviously, and I think Arkansas either has or is trying to have a similar law, just completely kind of end runs that. And it's the kind of thing that, like, drives Greg Sankey crazy. We were in Nashville listening to Sankey, and he was, you know, talking quite a bit there about, you know, what was the phrase he used? A race to the bottom, I believe, of you know, these state laws to try to circumvent a uniform set of rules. So Missouri might have won the race to the bottom. They definitely won a race for the best defensive end in the country. And beat Oklahoma, which was presumed to be the leader, and beat Georgia, which is, you know, if you play defense, that's probably the best place for you to go. How much did NIL have to do with it? I'm going to guess probably a fair amount. I mean, the numbers I've heard of, which are unreliable, unofficial, if they're anywhere close, the young man's getting paid and getting paid quite well. So good for him on that front. Is it good for college football? That's the other matter. I will say that how much of this is upfront money versus, yeah, do you wait 4 months, 6 months, 8 months, and you're going to get that paid that elsewhere that may help you become a better NFL player where the real money is? This reminds me, it's a little bit of a gimmick that reminds me what Billy Donovan once told the mom of a player, a very good recruit who came in and wanted $150,000 to go play at Florida. And he said, you're asking for $150,000. I'm trying to get your son $10 million, you know, and maybe the decision should be made more of that instead of what you can get on the front end. Nick Saban has brought up, you know, the astronomical amount of salary that his players have gotten in the NFL. Brings that up for a reason. Said, we're not here necessarily to pay him six figures on the front end. We want your son to be worth nine figures on the back end. And the player, by the way, whose mom went to Billy Donovan, ended up being a very good longtime NBA player. So, and he didn't get the money, didn't go to Florida. But it's just, are you trying to gimmick things on the front end for a short-term deal, or are you trying to do what's best for your athlete for his career?
Yeah, and again, there's no indication on this that played that big of a role. It's about his belief. He says that, you know, he's going to get playing time. Missouri really likes Drinkwitz and the staff, the SEC, the whole thing. So fine, he wants to play close to home. There's a million things. I don't even know what to make of it. I think it's a gimmick that really doesn't matter, is my guess. Right. It just is fascinating that you now have, again, every state would sit there and say, well, we were thinking of adding a factory, and they go, oh, well, we'll help you out. You go, well, we're going to put it across the river in the other state. Well, we're not going to help you out, right? This is literally what they do. And so from that level, I talked to one of the sponsors of the bill, Curtis Gregory, is a representative in Missouri, and he played offensive line for Mizzou back on their really good teams, their best team, that 12-2 team they had. Chase Daniel was their quarterback.
2007,
He was the only starter on offense that wasn't from Missouri. So Gregory's he says, look, everything's an incentive. Everything is incentive. The new locker room's an incentive. Our business school is an incentive. The weather that we're, hey, we got great weather. That's, you're trying to incent, everything is sales. This is just part of it. This is what we do. He says, how is this different from anything else we do as a lawmaker? So I just think he's like, why wouldn't we help Missouri? Right. We should want them to be good. It's more money. It's more everything. I don't know. Like, I don't think this is going to matter. I just found it to be absolutely fascinating. Oh. And state legislatures are getting in on this. And I've kept saying, at what point do we get when the state legislature starts funding football, college football and basketball? Like, if you're getting left out of a conference and you go, wow, they would never get involved in that. They literally build billion-dollar stadiums for billionaires in the NFL.
Yeah,
right. They build billion-dollar stadiums for billionaires just so they can keep their team. And they play 8 games in the thing a year, 10 games. Maybe it's used for some other. But they hand over to the richest people on the whole country billions of dollars in facility.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they cover the problem of, hey, man, Washington State isn't in a major conference. All right, you know what? Let's allocate $25 million a year to Washington State so they can still fund themselves. Like, at what point are we getting into real state-by-state wars? That, to me, was the window to the – I don't know if it'll lead to that, but, man, this was pretty wild that this is what they're sitting around coming up with.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, you can pull 20 different strings on NIL and collectives and where things are going, what angles people are trying to pull, that sort of thing. But this one I thought was one of the most interesting, and it does go to the, you know, state-by-state fanboy legislators and what they can do for state U. And, yeah, there is some benefit. When the hotels are full and the restaurants are full, that's good for Columbia. It's good for the state state economy, no doubt about it. Now, if they're trying to tell people the weather is good there, they're also lying, because that is – the University of Missouri is not home to anybody's idea of ideal weather. I can tell you that.
Yeah, so there you go. Daily Mail has come through for me finally.
Uh-oh.
Back at it, Daily Mail. Been on my probation for being not so good lately. A plague of beer-swigging raccoons.
What?
Are trashing people's homes and eating their pets, causing catastrophe in Germany.
Oh, my.
A plague of beer-swigging raccoons trashing people's homes and eating their pets. I guess the headline was the lead. Homeowners are being hit with bill repairs of up to 10,000 euros after returning from their travels to find their kitchens damaged by pesky creatures. Apparently, in this one high-rise in one town, the very aggressive group of raccoons are breaking in through windows, getting in and getting after anything they can inside the kitchen, including food and drinking beer, and then going after, like, if you had a fish bowl or something. that's not good.
How are they breaking in?
Windows. They're getting in through the window. Okay. It looks like someone left a crack of their window open. I don't know. There's pictures. They're definitely tough. The Germans are trying to fight back. They tried to eradicate the population. They killed 200,000 raccoons.
Oh, my.
Because it only been 10,000 a couple decades ago. They didn't have raccoons in Germany, but now they do. And so there's not much they can do.
An invasive species from Tennessee? Is that the deal here?
I don't. Yeah, what we did. Raccoons are tough, man. Yeah, you don't want those guys around.
No. They're almost a little bit like land-born otters, you know? I mean,
we have an otter update. Yeah, we have an otter update. We do? Too. Don't worry, yeah. Great. But what do you think of them drinking? I mean, German beer is very good. I can't really blame them.
No, no. I mean, they're showing some taste, at least, and living up to their German heritage, even if they're really from Tennessee. But by, you know, drinking
the
German
beer. Not the first American tourist to to head over there and get this done. Yeah. Yeah, definite problem there. So keep your head up on that. The otter, I got to get the otter. The otter bit somebody, like an actress, right? The otter bite.
I forgot we didn't get to that last week. Yeah.
It was like an actress from Secession. Was that it? Yeah, there it is. Crystal Finn is an actress so someone's trying to make me pay for this article. No, I'm not paying San Francisco Chronicle to read the otter bite. Anyway, she got bit and said it was not good. She was at the Feather River near the Plumas National Forest and was swimming.
She got bit on the butt.
Yeah.
That's a quote.
Went after her. So I don't know if it's the same one. I don't know if it's a different otter. I just know.
Well, she said, there were like multiple of them coming at her, and then she said they definitely seem to be coordinated. So they're not just out there and aggressive. They're now organizing. They're starting to team up.
So you think the otters and the raccoons are going like bicontinental war here?
Yeah, look, they've got stuff in common. They kind of, you know, about the same size and claws.
German economy, is that like, that's one of the, is that the second biggest in the world or is it behind China? It's a big economy. I think they're going after the big dogs.
Sure.
Give them credit. They're taking them on, you know?
Yeah. No, they're shooting big. They're not messing with Turkmenistan or something. I mean, they're going America, Germany.
Okay. There's that. All right. And finally, big weekend next week in Scotland. There is going to be a, the largest group of monster hunters are descending on Scotland next week to try to find the Loch Ness Monster. Over 100 volunteers are heading to the Loch, and then another 100 watching remotely via drones, anything they can. And they're coming from New Zealand, they're coming from Japan, they're coming everywhere to try to find Nessie, who, of course, was seen in 1933 in this one grainy photo. So they're going to surround this lake and find it. The volunteers are going to be watching the water. This is a quote. If they spot something, hopefully they will film it and then submit it to our online portal. This is Paul Nixon, manager of the Loch Ness Center. And so this is it. So my question for you, Pat, will they find Nessie, or will Nessie know about this and hide out?
Well, I would say this, that first of all, I do want to see video just of the weirdos that are going to gather here. If we're really going to have like 100 of these people gathered at a small Scottish lake. look, Nessie's been hiding for 90 years. You think she's dumb? She knows they're coming. There's no way she's showing her head. She's going to get down there to the bottom, or, you know, she might even have tunneled out by now into the North Sea or something else up there. And there's no chance they're finding her. They'll pretend they do, and we'll see, you know, like people getting all freaky. Oh, there was the shadow on the water. That was probably her. But no, Nessie will continue to be undefeated against the humans over the last 90 years.
How do you explain to your wife that that's what you're going to spend the vacation money on?
Yeah, I'm leaving Japan to go to Scotland to go stand around a lake.
Bold, you think these people have wives, Dan?
Yeah, it's a fair point. That's a fair point. Why would anyone partner up with them in any... Sorry, can't go away this summer. I'm spending the money to hunt Nessie. because it can't be cheap to get to this place. Scotland, like, there's not a lot of direct flights into Scotland from more, certainly not from New Zealand. No. Yeah, they probably don't have wives or friends. Maybe this is their friend. It's kind of nice.
This is it. These are, yeah, right. It's a little like, you know, one of those Comic-Con conventions or whatever.
It's all about niche communities, Pat. It's all about niche communities these days. There
you go. What would the Scottish pub crowd look like with these guys? I mean, I kind of have low expectations for their drinking. And
I don't. Yeah, they probably don't drink. They probably don't drink. They do. I would like to hear it, although I can never understand what a Scottish guy says. It's English, but not really.
Right.
English adjacent. When you get a real Scotsman talking, you're like, I recognize all those words. I just don't know what they mean when you say them. I don't know. That's where we're at. One last story that got sent to me a bunch. U.S. News and World Report, you know, I always mock these rankings.
Oh, yeah, we know.
They rank the top 15 agricultural schools in the country and includes some surprising ones. Rutgers is 15th.
What?
Yeah, Rutgers.
Come on.
The vast farmlands of Jersey.
Yeah. You're growing food trucks. Like, what else are they growing?
Yeah, that's the nice. Grease truck. Yeah, they've grown. Yeah. I mean, there's some Washington State, Iowa State, Ohio State, Michigan State, right? Illinois. But then it gets a little dicey at the top. Number five, Harvard.
What?
Harvard, the fifth best agricultural school. are they growing weed? What are they like? Yeah. What in Cambridge?
Where, yeah, find me the plot of land where they're growing anything there.
Harvard Yard has some grass, but they don't even mow it because it'd be unfair to the bees or something, right? Like, no mow.
Fields on a hill. It's not a good field design either. Remember, we played them. It was a mess.
The field was crooked?
Oh, yeah.
Did you win?
Oh, yeah, we beat them.
Yeah, beat the Hard. URI, that's it. Yeah, this is really good. Harvard came in fifth. Kansas State's not on the list. They're chapped at this, by the way.
They should be.
Yeah, they're chapped. Florida is fourth. UC Davis is third.
I believe that.
Cornell is second.
What? Come on.
Two Ivy Leagues in the top five.
What?
And number one, somehow, the University of Massachusetts.
What? This is ridiculous.
That's right, baby. Number one.
It's the only thing your alma mater's been number one in ever.
Dining. They have a good dining program. Dining common.
What does that have to do with agriculture?
Well, you got to grow the food. I don't know. Number one. There are some farms in Massachusetts, but not a lot. It's mainly cities and granite quarries. Like, we grow granite. That's what they grow. You want a countertop? We got you covered. Sean, do you ever drive through the vast farmlands of Massachusetts and think that's got to be the best ag school in the country? Maybe it is because they can grow stuff on quarry pits.
Well, yeah. That's if you're growing. If part of this is degree of difficulty and you can grow anything, then I could see Rutgers and Harvard and Cornell and UMass. Otherwise, no.
Yeah, this is terrible. U.S. News and World Report's got to get their ass. I mean, what? I'm going to have to. This is an ongoing saga. We got to look more into this.
We're on the case.
K-State, I hear you. I hear you, K-State. I mean, imagine being Kansas State. It's all you got.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't crack this list in your K-State, you might as well just consider folding the college.
Yeah, step it up. They're resting on their little purple laurels out there, apparently, drinking that Tang, Coach Tang beer.
That's it.
Thinking they're good at agriculture. And apparently, Cornell, Harvard, and UMass are kicking your ass. I don't know. All right, that's the show. We'll be back later in the week. We will have our picks. Race for the Case begins.
Yeah, a little week zero action.
Ross will be back to bring some intelligence and actual perspective to this pod. and all will be right in the world. So appreciate everybody. Keep subscribing, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about you. We appreciate it all. We will talk to you later.